Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
So we're going to introduce ourselves. Start with this beautiful young man over here.
I'm Armando Fuller. I'm with a company called Wave. And I'm part of the, in our company, we have our design group on our engineering team. And the guys that are in and around the campus now, helping produce Exponential and all that, we're all part of the cooler part of the company, which is our design team and creatives. And so I'm part of the dive team, which we will talk about experience and set moods and storytelling environments. So I get to be working for him on that aspect.
How long have you been doing this?
This is my 30th year. I did it, the church, well, you don't know any of the churches I started with, because they all blew up.
Non-related.
Right.
it's amazing when you ever met someone who just, when God begins to bless them, they think, God, it's really about me now. And so, unfortunately, a lot of the ones we helped develop, they just kind of shelf life. And so, you know, I'm fortunately now privileged to be part of, you know, a couple churches that are moving and grooving and building and going, you know. So I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, so that'll let you know who we're associated with. That's the international sign.
Cool.
So, 30 years.
Awesome.
How long have you been doing?
This is my 16th year of being around churches, working. You know, I worked in churches my entire life.
So he's going to talk to you like this all day?
No, I was just fixing my band.
Oh, I thought it was like...
Just, you know, I've been at this for about 15 or 16 years now, and one of the things I love doing is being able to learn churches' stories. What we do is we just... Your story is our story. People ask us, what do we do? Like the first thing I always say is, you know, what God is doing in your churches across the country, that's what God's doing in our company. And that's really awesome. We get to see churches' story come to life. And, you know, I kind of put it this way. People no longer trust, inherently, our guests who come. They no longer trust a pastor on a stage communicating, this is what we're about, right? But it's that consistent communication over time that leads to trust. And so what we're able to do is to be able to communicate that messaging and help churches tell their story visually, environmentally, technologically, all those things, so that we can bring that to life.
And we don't want to tell it the way we would tell it. We want to tell it in an authenticity that is uniquely yours. For instance, Joby, who'll be speaking next session, final session, 1122 Church. You know, literally, youth pastor 4 years ago. How many is he running now?
I think over 6,000, I think.
So, the thing with, and we've done all of Joby's touch points. And the thing was, is he's just blatantly honest and simple and pure. There's no air to him. He's just a good dude. I'm a little questioned about his sports affiliations, but I can handle that. But he passionately wants to simply tell people about Christ. And there's nothing else to it. It's a great piece of meat with no A1 sauce. Just put it on there.
Sounds good.
Can we get a grill going here?
Yes. So here's what I want to do. First of all, I just want to say, like, what I'm seeing out of the church today is that there seems to be a deeper awareness of guest experience, of touch points, of speaking different languages so that you alleviate the tendency to miscommunicate or leave out a certain audience that is attending our church. there's a deeper awareness, and I feel like the tools are there in a much, much greater way than church plants 10 years ago. There's more information, there's more resources. I feel like out the gate, churches can do it better than they were. I was a part of a church plant almost 10 years ago now, and gosh, there was no such thing as what we're experiencing today, and we had to make a lot of stupid mistakes because there was nobody to say, hey, don't make those stupid mistakes. I mean, I just heard the story of this church up here who is in their second year, and they just started a second location. Like, come on, that's crazy. Like, when my church was 2 years old, we had like 170 people, and it was like, yay, we're winning. And so as we move on, we're going to keep this super informal. We're going to try and go about 35-ish minutes, and we'll do some Q&A, and then if we want to split early, we can split early. But here's what I want to encourage you to do along the way, and this is not in this session, but in ministry and life, is learn to ask a lot of questions. Stop and listen. Ask questions of people who don't think like you. What about, as we're telling our story, and as we're crafting an incredible experience for our guests, we're never going to know, because we're the quote-unquote professionals who think we've got it figured out. So what we need to do is go and ask the people who are on the ground, in the trenches, the languages that we're trying to learn how to speak. So what does it look like? Maybe we go and form a focus group of people who don't go to church, who are a particular demographic or lifestyle or whatever, and we say, hey, can we pick your brain for an hour? We'll give you $50 gift card somewhere just for your time. We just want to pick your brain because we want to learn how to speak the language. Bruce Lee said this: a wise man can learn more from a foolish question than a fool can learn from a wise answer. The more questions we ask, the more we become in tune. I'm a big fan of asking questions because obviously, like, people don't want to hear us talk about our thing all the time. But if we can ask them about their thing, that's when we really can start to engage. So brand is simply how people experience us. You have a brand. You have a personal brand. I've got a personal brand. Armando has a personal brand.
I'm just not wearing it. I'll have to have it home.
Yep, he's got a personal brand. And typically when we see a logo, we think brand. But that's just a visual identity that associates with logo. And so here's a question that we want to ask today is, does who we as a church, who we say we are, and what we say we're about match up with the guest's experience? I'll give you some examples here. Some big brands who are known or want to be known by their taglines, but how we experience them is a little different. Here's some fun ones. Urban Outfitters, pay money to look homeless. I've been guilty a few times of that one. Nature Valley, crumbs everywhere. Anybody have kids? Yes. They're not allowed to eat Nature Valley in any vehicles. How about IKEA? We just throw in extra parts just to mess with you. Anybody been there?
Mm-hmm.
You always have those extra few pieces. Like, what's this? It still works. Gillette, we're just going to keep adding more blades. My favorite, Kmart, we still exist. So I hope that's just an easy way to help us understand that how people perceive us may be different than how we intend to be perceived. So the question there is, how do we begin speaking the language of the guests that we're reaching? How do we open up our environments? How do we create an unforgettable experience so that people begin to know who you are the moment they open their car door?
And one of the things, one of my responsibilities within the company is I inevitably work with either renovations or new builds in churches. So I'm always dealing with senior pastors and architects, and when they get ready to do a new building, I'll use Seacoast as an example. That's my project. We're building the new campus. And Inevitably, the first thing you do if you're going to build a building or try to figure out a story is you go visit everybody else. And you'll say, I'll take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know, and you try to come back with this thing of, I like that, I don't like this, I like that, I don't like this. And so when we were sitting with Gray, we went and visited all the art churches that he's associated with. And he gave me a laundry list of things. And he would always say to me, I don't want to offend you because there's things I didn't like what you did at this church. and I'm like, well, that's cool. And so he lists them, and I'm like, well, I'm not offended because, Greg, that's not your personality. I didn't design it for you. I designed it for X. He goes, okay, I get that. Still didn't like it. Okay, good.
Make sure he throws that in there.
Yeah. Oh, he gets the last word. So at the end of the day, I said, let me ask you a question. Why'd you move to Charleston, South Carolina? What draws people to this area? He goes, it's just the environment. People love this lifestyle. I said, cool. I agree. I grew up. I was born in Hawaii, lived in California. The reason the company's even called Wave is because I got saved on a surfboard. Smoking a joint is really awesome. I met Jesus in a way most of you will never, ever experience. And so water and that lifestyle, that look and feel is always important to me, which is why I always wear shorts, because it's just part of my culture. Even going to visit architects, they just know I'm going to show up and shorts, just the way I roll. So I said to Greg, you know, if you, how many has ever been to Charleston, South Carolina? Right now it's under like 4 feet of water. But there's a look and a feel and a vibe to it. But as they started to develop the story, and Seacoast has got a great story, you know, great worship, great heart, it's a good vibe. There's a tempo map to Seacoast. It's not, they're not in a hurry. It's kind of rolls, right? So we ended up working with the architects and Greg and the team, Jason and Josh and everybody. And I said, why are we building a building that looks nothing like Seacoast or the environment? What if we could create storytelling environments that made it feel like it was always there in the first place? And Greg says, okay, I like that direction. Because he couldn't get with, well, I don't like Celebration because it's this, and I'm not a, you know, I don't, Highlands is not our style. Just went through all these things. And so when we finally did the dive and really talked through it, we ended up coming up with something that they could naturally get into and feel comfortable. But the most important thing was that unchurched people, you know, when we enter the building as believers, we make that experience holy. There's nothing about a building. There's nothing about message, inventory, environment, 27,000 LED panels and 500 lights moving. None of that creates spiritual environment. We as believers create that. And so when it was all said and done, we ended up creating something that an unchurched person would feel absolutely comfortable being in the midst, and then the ministry of Seacoast could do their thing while they're there. So it was a complete departure from what the architects had intended and what even the leadership of Seacoast was even thinking. So it just said, what if we could do that? Let's draw it up and see. And it turned out to be a wise decision.
That's good. Here's what I want you guys to write down if you're taking notes here. I think the most important aspect of you understanding your story is knowing your why. W-H-Y. You're going to see a lot of what around Mariners Church today and tomorrow. You're going to see a lot of what in the main sessions. But I highly encourage you to examine the presenters and the worship and the moods and the environments and ask yourself the question, why? I don't think we can truly define our wins as a church unless we can understand our whys. It's when we know the why that we can define that win. And when we can define that win, we can bring other people around us. Because let's be honest, we can't do it ourselves, and we shouldn't. We're not all that. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, everything is not about me. Let's get people around us. Let's empower teams and volunteers and allow them to be effective. But we got to be able to communicate the why to them. You know, obviously, like, I know this goes without saying, but I'm gonna go ahead and say it anyway. Like, don't try and be somebody else's ministry. You have a unique story. You're not going to be Mariners. You're not going to be Saddleback. You're not going to be New Spring. You're not going to be Fellowship. Like, you got to be you. And it's when that story comes out that your ministry is going to be most powerful. Now, as you grow, things will change. You will mature. Your ministry will mature. There will be seasons where we figure out ourselves and what is our riff? What is our style? What is our speed? What is our vibe?
The sink of the ministry.
The sink. That's good. I think that's why a lot of church plants fail. They just try to like map. Let's grab all this and this package. And I'm gonna buy that thing, and we're gonna do this, and we're gonna have all these banners and lots of pipe and drape.
We're still gonna be unique.
But we're gonna be the new church. But we're the church down the street. You can't put somebody else's puzzle piece into your puzzle. You got to figure out what is our puzzle piece that we need to communicate. Now, everything we're talking about doesn't apply to just mega churches. Every single piece of this is applicable from day one church plant, which we work with, all the way up to whatever, you know, this campus you see today. It's like, you know, this is a pretty large campus, large venue here. It's applicable to every size.
In fact, it's easier. City Point just moved to northern Colorado from Australia. And I met them because I do all the work in Wetota and Uganda. And just immediately kicked it off. Great, great artistry, great passion for ministry. But the thing Aaron said to me, he said, when we plant, I want to understand my story and what I'm doing out of the gate. To the best of our abilities, we don't want to change things around. It was important for as Dive was being developed, it was important for us to make sure it worked for a church planner and not just, you know, the unattainable. Because when you're planting, you know, you appreciate, like, how many of you have ever been to, like, a Hillsong church? Okay. So I've been fortunate to go to all the campuses around. And the thing I've learned about Hillsong is they do Hillsong. It's Hillsong music. It's Hillsong everything. And when you talk to Brian, you know, he's a very passionate guy, but he's very strategic. He knows exactly where he's going. He's got this thing mapped out. It's been a rollout since jump. And so that's where I really started going, well, okay, you know, if you look at all the big movements around the world, they all start with the worship. You know, it's a worship movement. But it's their story. It's the Aussies being the Aussies. And Aussies are going to be Aussies no matter what part of the world they're in. They don't think about this from a cultural perspective. The Aussies didn't care that the Western Christians didn't like drinking wine and stuff, right? They just rolled all up in it. And it's hysterical to see friends of mine who don't drink. But if they get around the Aussies, oh yeah, man, they're knocking one back. And so it's like, okay, but it's their unique cultural thing. But they don't make apologies for it. And so when you're developing and designing your story, you know, own that. Be authentic to it. It doesn't matter what it is, because the only thing that's really hip, cool, and relevant is authenticity. You know? Look at some of the bands that have come out. You know, because they're so authentically cool and geeky and weird, we like that band. But we hate a band that's perfect, polished, and groomed. You know? So just as you develop and you look around, be authentic to that.
You've got to be intentional. That's that authenticity. Again, you're gonna figure yourself out over and over. Let me give you a little secret. Just know that your plans are gonna fail. They're gonna fail, and
that's a good motivational point.
They're gonna fail more than once.
Bunch of losers.
But here's my motivational point here. Fail, allow yourself to fail, and fail forward. Learn from your mistakes. Our mistakes are what shape our story. Our failures are what allow us to learn, to gain insight, and to move forward. Seth Godin says this: the cost of being wrong is less than the cost of doing nothing. It's a pretty powerful statement. The cost of being wrong is less than the cost of doing nothing. I saw a quote yesterday on social media that said something to the effect of some people who are strong have never had it easy. It's that friction that causes that sharpening that allows us to grow and to learn. And that's how our story is developed. Our story, I don't really think that our story can be mapped out with all these perfect values and mission statements, and it's polished and perfect, and we roll out our branding package as a church or a brand new plant. But I really feel like we need to remind ourselves that it's okay to be messy. In the name of excellence, we've sought after perfection at the cost of other human beings and their efforts and their energy that we expect them to put out, because we're doing this in the name of the kingdom. But what if we could allow our church's story to be a messy one, where it's not perfect, we don't have it all together, we're going to all together, and we're going to be vulnerable and authentic with each other, because that's what the world wants. They want authenticity. They don't want our polished salesmen. People don't want to hear a salesman talk about our thing. What they would rather hear is somebody whose life has been changed, just the satisfied customer. So you only get one chance to make a first impression. You only get one chance to make a first impression. People, every single weekend in all of your churches, they're there because somebody invited them. Maybe it went something to the effect of, I promise you, our church is not like other churches. You will love it. Just try it once. And they hound and hound and hound and invite and invite and invite. And finally, like, dude, just leave me the hell alone. I will go to church with you. And this, I was phrasing them. I was phrasing them. Leave me alone. I will go to church with you if you stop bugging me. And so they're there and they're apprehensive and they're not sure. Maybe they're a little irritated because their kids had a bad morning or whatever. We only get one chance to make that very first impression. So where does that first impression usually begin? It certainly doesn't begin in our lobbies. It begins outside. It begins
on your website.
It begins on social media. Because guess what? If you invite somebody to come with you, what's the first thing they're going to want to do? They're going to want to go check you out online. They're going to probably start a website if you gave them some type of information. They want to see, like, are these people weird? Are they going to, you know, I've heard about, like, snakes in church. Is there going to be snakes there? Is this, you know, are people going to, like, judge me? Do I have to dress perfect? All those things.
There, in respect to website, when we were building our new building, and it was really funny because my pastor didn't know what I did for the whole first year I was at the church. I didn't want to be that guy. I just wanted to kind of thing. But then I walked into our office, and our pastoral staff is in our conference room. And so I walk by, and he sees me, and he waves, and he said, "Do you work here?" I said, "Yeah, I work here." He said, "Oh, cool. What do you do?" "I work in the design department." Staff kind of laughs, and I keep going. I don't want to deal with my pastor at my church. We were designing their new building, and so I asked him one question. I said, "You got a really great website. I liked it enough that I wanted to come." I said, "The challenge was the site was so hip and cool with such sexy people on it, and everybody was perfect, and they smiled, and they were cover models, and you photoshopped them." I didn't see any of what's on the website represented in the experience of the ministry. So I'm sitting there shopping for Mexican food. I get there and it's Chinese food kind of thing. You know, and it was kind of, took me a while to get over that until I could verbalize it to him, right? So then they hired another cool, sexy, we don't do websites, just want to get that clear. Hate those things. We only do one website, ours. who'd want that? Anyway, so they hired another new, sexy, cool, relevant company with guy designers in skinny jeans.
and came to our church, and they designed our new website for our new building. And they had this really cool orange couch on the site, which I thought was really cool. It was like, hey, let's start a conversation. Let's build a relationship. Very cool. Thought it was great. High-fived them. So when we started to design the interiors of our building, I said, well, where are we going to put the orange couches? And pastor's wife was like, we ain't going to put an orange couch in nowhere. I said, no, yes, you are. You put one on the dang website. I promise you, if somebody's tracking us, and they see, I said, everything about the website will end up somewhere in our building. They go, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. I said, no. You either make it look like it is, because if you go on a website to look at whatever your favorite Capital Grill restaurant, wherever your favorite restaurant is, right? But you know, when you
talks a lot about food.
I always talk about food. Anyway, but if you look at Capital Grill, they always take pictures, right? Because they're trying to get you to understand what you're getting ready to experience. Why is that any different than the experience of our church? So there's no way to have this website, because I know as an unchurched God hater, you know, I wasn't, you know, I was, he's nice compared to what I told the guy that invited me to church. I dropped about 10, 15 F-bombs. I'm like, you know, you and your God can, you know. So I get the whole God-hater thing, because I was one. And smoking a joint, which made me hungry, which is why I like food. See, it all
the munchies.
Yeah, it's all munchies. Oreo cookies and milk, that was the number one thing. Anyway, so at the end of the day, it's important that if you're going to do this website, I really believe the success factor of trust as a first impression is that whatever you apply to the site, you have to apply elements of that into mm-hmm. your visitor experience. So guess what we had on opening day at our church? Orange couches. We had this really cool logo, this super genius 20-something design on the website. And I took that logo, and I had this big brown wall that's like 16 foot tall. And I took our logo, and I did a 16-foot by 18-foot circular logo on that wall, lit it up like daylight. Why? Because you could see it from the road. Because you'd be shocked about how many people that are trying to figure you out, they'll drive through your parking lot at night.
That's right.
Nightscaping mm-hmm. is big money for draw. It's the bait. You're fishing, right? So create the bait. And the first bait is the website. And I would venture to say 90% of churches, their website looks one way, building and experience looks radically different. Because the best thing y'all do on your website is you advertise all your sermon series. Guess what an unchurched person thinks of that? Freaking schizophrenic bunch of crap. What are they this week? They're doing that? They don't understand that moment. So the best thing you can do is start inviting unchurched people to your planning sessions. It'd be an eye-opening
experience. That's that focus group idea.
Yeah, get the God-haters in there to tell you how to do it right.
So our environments are going to tell a story. So the question is, what is the story they're going to tell? Disney. We're close to Disneyland here, right? Fairly close. Disneyland here. So they're probably the best in the world at telling a story, creating an environment. As you walk, Cirque du Soleil, they're another great one. You walk through their environments, and it's crazy. All the environments are playing a song at the exact same time. But as you move from environment to environment, the style of the song changes, and the smells change, and the environment change, and we can feel things, and it's five sensory kind of thing happening. They're the master at it. It's that first impression that we know exactly what they're all about. And Disney's mantra from the get-go is, we want to make people happy. We want them to feel happiness when they come to our parks and experience our stuff. What about that, maybe that old smelly church that you grew up in? There was an experience there that
you
there was a story.
The carpet, can't you?
You can kind of go back there and see the yellow linoleum flooring and the dingy lights that pop, pop, pop every once in a while. And it tells a story. What's the story it's going to tell? If you're portable, my goodness, every single thing that you're putting out there, the neatness of your setup, the condition of your pull-up banners. If they're scuffed and they're dingy and they're tattered, replace them. It's all telling a story. You mentioned Capital Grill, one of my favorite restaurants. It's creating an incredible environment where you just feel like $1 million, and then you spend close to it.
For a little piece of meat this big, but that $400 piece of steak is amazing.
Do you know that our environments can change the mood of our guests? Now, it's not just walls and paint and technology. It's the people that we put in those environments. Think about it this way. This is it helps me understand social media and websites and then integrating it to a live experience. We're telling our story. Our website should be like our national capital. And then all of our social media accounts should be like embassies that speak those languages. And then ultimately leads them to come and get their visa and come and experience what it's like to be in our country, so to speak, when they come into our church buildings, our campuses. And again, it's consistent communication over time leads to trust. If we're saying one thing, we're welcoming, we're accepting, we love you no matter what happened yesterday or where you were last night, we're glad you're here. We're saying that, but nobody helped them when they were struggling with their children and all their stuff, and it was raining, and they ran to the door, and nobody held the door for them, and they walked in, and they got all the way to the auditorium without somebody shaking their hand or smiling or hugging them or whatever. If those things aren't matching up, then we're creating an inauthentic experience. Consistent communication over time leads to trust. That's when people begin to trust us. You always need to define your surroundings. Think through. Here's an exercise for you the next time. Do it this Sunday. We're a few days away from Sunday. After it's all set up or after it's all turned on and opened up, go out to the parking lot. Maybe even get in your car and drive up. Or leave campus and 10 minutes before service starts, get in your car and drive in and if you have a parking team, let them park you. You walk in. You observe people's responses. My gosh, we get so busy in doing the ministry that we don't take time to think, how is this ministry communicating? Because again, we say we're about one thing, but do our environments communicate something totally different that might be contradictory, that might be inauthentic?
And you don't need... Who's really into sports in here? All right, favorite team?
Rockets, Houston Rockets.
Okay. Imagine if you go to the Rockets, Houston. I get you on that. But the Carolina Panthers are 4-0 right now. I just want to say that out loud. 4.
They played all their easy teams the first 4 games.
We played somebody from Cleveland. Anyway, but imagine the Rockets, same team on the floor, but you go into the whole environment and they've just stripped every brand message, every identifier, every emotional thing off the walls, off the uniforms, off every place. And it's just the team playing in all white, and it's just a plain arena. We are so conditioned to have that multi-sensory. Everywhere we look, we see an identifier. I was with a client in Scottsdale, and they took me to the Diamondbacks game. And it's considered one of the most brand-intensive experiences in sports history, right? Better than the Yankees. From my parking lot, from my car, where we walked in, we had 49 touch points. I counted 49 touch points by the time I got to my chair. I felt like I was going to church. Their door ticket takers thanked me for coming and being part of the experience. I had to finally tell the hot dog vendor, stop coming. I'm good. Don't need any more. It's just everything. There was 350 vendors coming into the stands at all times. Just, it's the most impressive thing I've ever seen in my life. So their attention to detail, and what I found out was Scottsdale hosts a lot of the, they have a lot of the restaurants, the high-end restaurant CEOs, their headquarters are there. So basically the owner of the Diamondbacks petitioned all of them and said, help me create the same experience for my people as you do for all your restaurants. So all these guys got together, he did a think tank, genius stuff. So, but what was really sad was I went to another church that asked me to come visit and check out their guest experience while I was in Arizona. From my car to my seat, not one person said, hey, get out, love you, why are you wearing a black beret? You would think a white dude in all black clothes and a beret in Scottsdale, Arizona would stand out in some way, shape, or form. Not even that happened. And so when the pastor's like, bro, man, we just really appreciate it. And he's just a sweetheart, right? It's like, man, you know, our church really just loves on people. And I, no, they don't. Well, how many people kind of came up to you and just told you about how we all operate? Nobody touched me. Nobody talked to me. Nobody. I said, now, I got to hear the two ladies talking to each other about what they did Friday night at the door. That was awesome. That was an amazing experience. So, you know, as you are helping to think about that, you start getting familiarity within your own vibe, and then you begin to create your own inner culture that has nothing to do with who you're drawing in. And all of a sudden, the unchurched people are like, you know, because that's your target market. So what you got to keep reminding yourself, and see, since I didn't grow up in church and I didn't have... My mom and dad were Vatican I Catholic, so that when I got saved, that was over. An Italian, so that was even worse. My mom refused to talk to me for 2 years. She goes, you've already been baptized. I said, in a dude in a robe, he sprinkled something on me. I didn't even know what that was. You know, I didn't know who Christ was. So at the end of the day, your ability to have all those touch points matter to the unchurched. Not to the faithful, because the faithful should get it. They need to mature up and man up in Christ and quit being coddled and actually teach them to go love on the unchurched. But we spend so much time thinking, man, if that family leaves, that's going to really hurt us. Okay, if they're holding you hostage, kick them to the curb. You know, God is bigger than all that. In fact, sometimes he's looking at your garden going, you got too many weeds. You expect me to go ahead and bless you, pull the weeds out, and let's go with Gideon, you know, strip it down, bring the heat.
So he's talking about touch points and experiences of sports teams. I think we've all experienced that. Here's a thought for you. This really, really helps me to think through when I craft experiences with people like you, is we have to think through our guest experience like we think through a worship set. How many of you are worship leaders or help plan services? Okay, almost all of you. Think through your transitions from the exit of the car, walking to the building, entering the building, walking through the lobby, checking in children, using the restroom, going to the auditorium. Think of the transitions between those environments like the transitions between a worship set or a service. You ever been to those services where you feel like the people on stage pop the clutch? You're like, whoa, that was so weird getting from one moment to the other. Like, there's complete silence.
Y'all pop the clutch? I pop the clutch.
There's complete silence, and everybody kind of stares at each other like, what do we do now? I was at a national conference last week, and the artist stopped singing and kind of, he finished his last song and looked back and forth. And he said, I guess I'm supposed to be done now, and walks off, and there was 17 seconds of nothing. That's what I'm talking about by popping.
Years.
That's what I'm talking.
That's years.
That's what I'm talking about popping the clutch. That happens in our environments. So I want you to think through your environments the way that you think through planning a worship set. Make sure that those transitions are tight. Those transitions often create that smooth feeling. I like to use this word, simplexity. I thought I came up with it, and then I kind of looked it up online and found out that somebody else had came up with it as well, but I'll claim it as like it was an original idea to me. But simplexity is this. It just simply means that for the end user, it appears super simple. But what went into creating that simple experience on the back end through thinking through ideas and environments and your story and your values and, you know, our themes become the tracks that carry our vision along and that people can understand. We're about family, we're about community, we're about relationships, we're about, hey, this is a place where life can begin, this is a place where your story can become rewritten, all those things. We think through that, like, what does that transition look like? And how do we put a lot of effort into making sure that this team is responsible for that and not talking to each other at the door? And this team is making sure that hey, first time people don't want to stand in a long line to write the names of all their kids. They just want to get rid of them and go sit for an hour thinking, okay, this is the only date night we have this week and it's on Sunday morning or Saturday night or whenever it is. That's what I mean by simplexity. Let's try and make it as stupid simple for the end users, the guests, as possible. Here's a thought for you. Clarity will always, always, always trump creativity. Don't try and be so creative in the way that we craft our environments that we completely lose people.
And one of the ways we do it at our church is if you're serving on a weekend, whether you're a parking lot attendant, usher, greeter, blah, 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 everybody starting on Thursday and full commitment on Friday, because we have Saturday afternoon service, Saturday evening service, everybody has to stop listening to the whatever music they like to listen to, and the only songs that they're committed to listening to is the songs that we're going to be playing that weekend. Now, what does that do? That gets everybody in sync. That gets everybody tempoing to what they're getting ready to experience. And you'd be amazed, like the greeter, like the parking lot attendants, they were in their God pods, is what we call them. And they're bringing people in, they're smiling. And the ushers and the greeters, everyone's, it's amazing to see it. And one of the guys that wrote a book here, I forget which, I mean, it's many books are being written out of this camp. But one of the examples is he said, I went and did secret shopping at this church in Charlotte. And he's like, everybody was on the same page. It was the most amazing thing I've ever heard. It's like everybody was listening to the same music. And he's going on and on and on telling about this. And I'm like, what church did you go to? He said, Freedom House. I said, yeah, they were all listening to the same music. He goes, I knew it. He's like, everyone was greeting the same way. It was like this kind of flow. And then I get in the service and the guys clicks off and it's in tempo. And so it becomes this whole moment to where there's no, like he's saying, this no transition. So we just decided, how do you palate cleanse the people working? Because, you know, they're lay people. They're not the paid professional ministry people. But how do you get them out of their environment? Well, you saturate them with the same thing that, because you require your band. You know, there's a difference between listening and meditating, right? So you're not going to expect your band to go on stage and your lead guitar player to listen to the song. They got to break down the chords, right? You got to really know. I mean, and like for my sound guys at our church, my lay people guy, and I'm a lay person sound guy at my church. I don't want to be paid by my pastor. They have to chart out the reverb times and the drum hits and what's a powerful moment, just like the band does. If the band is charting, the techs are charting. My daughter, who runs Pro Presenter, she spends 3 days in her bedroom, and you can hear her. And singing off key, it's horrible. It's like dying. And I hear her hitting. What the heck? So finally, I said, I knocked on her door. Of course, I had to go in because she couldn't hear me. And I said, she goes, yeah, Daddy, what? What are you doing? She goes, oh, I'm studying my Pro Presenter moves. I said, what's that? She goes, that's my space bar. I was like, and that was my epiphany. I said, well, if you're doing it, because she never misses a cue. At 13-year-old, she was rocking cues, right? So I thought, well, if it works for her, it'll work for everybody. And it did. So like he's saying, these transitions, if you, because again, your commitment is Sunday, right? So you're going to ask someone to sacrifice their entertainment value, because how many hours does pastor spend getting the word ready? Does he just show up and wing it? So I asked my pastor, how much time do you spend preparing? He said 2.5 to 3 days. But he rocks the word. So I thought, gosh, I'm only asking our people to not listen to whatever they listen to and just focus to pay honor to the worship team. And it's amazing, the transformation.
That's awesome. So as we're crafting these environments and telling our story, keep it simple, keep it clear. I think people really just want to know three things. Three things. Here, this is earth shattering here. Where do I pee? Where do I check my kids in? And is it safe? And where's the auditorium? Boom. Clarity over creativity every single time. I worked with this one church and they were trying to come up with a name for their welcome center. They said, we want to have this really cool environment where they can go and get all the information they want. We're in a central location where they can have all their questions answered. They can join a group, join a team, whatever. They're coming up with all these names. And finally I just said, like, what do you want to do? Well, we want a central place for information. Information central. That answers the question before you even ask it. It doesn't have to be creative. When we come up with these, like, because we're like the hip church, we want to make it hip, and so we come up with these crazy names. Like, let's just be clear, simple. Learn to adapt often. Try new things. What works now is not going to work in 3 months or 6 months. Don't be afraid to kill things when they're not working anymore. Only by redefining the problem are we able to come up with a brand new set of solutions. When you're coming up against, hey, we've either got to do it this way or we've got to do it this way, know that we're not thinking large enough. There is always, always, always a third option. Always, in every single situation. Again, like, let's get people around us who don't speak the language that we speak. And I'm talking about, I know we all speak English, or for the most part, but get people around us who are speaking different languages, different, maybe it's a different race that we're trying to reach. Maybe it's a different people who are into whatever sport, because that's the area that we live in. Maybe it's a big skateboarding culture. Maybe it's mountain biking, depending on what part of the country you live in. Let's get those people around our conversation. Let your teams help craft your story, because when they speak into it, it becomes a lot more tangible. We sit in an office and we dream, but they're on the ground every single weekend. Let's allow them to speak into it. Layer as much as you can. What do I mean by that? Your conversation, your communication is going to speak differently to different people. Some people are audible. Some people are visual. Some people are tactile. So you've got to be able to create things that are layered. So if we say our environment is about authenticity, it's about community, we need to create opportunities for people to hang together. We need to be able to portray photographs of people hanging together. Because what it does is it shows people, hey, I see it on there, and I actually see human beings hanging with each other. We don't need to put... I think that the church historically over the last 10 years has said we're gonna put in words what we're all about. But you look through social media feeds, like, I skip over the things that don't have pictures now, because I just want to see what's going on in everybody's life. I want to see what... I can't read anymore either, you know? And so what if we could create environments that tell our story, that people can know what's about us, but don't even use words?
They're not going to read it anyway. Think about it from the unchurched. The guy where I got saved on the beach, he created a beach church. He had surf racks. It was the only church back in 1981 that you could wear OP shorts, lightning bolts, you know. He was really trying to absolutely, radically
convert the culture, because none of the other church was too busy wearing, you know, blue jackets, red ties, and white shirts, coming to the beach trying to be authentic. And nothing against their passion, they just, the approach was horrible. But at the end of the day, when you went, he didn't have, I mean, he had pictures of surf environments hanging. And he was doing this in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing, visionary, radical surfer, but radical believer. So yeah, I'm a big fan. If you're rushing into church, don't think that somebody, their first time coming, is going to stop and say, oh, look at all those words. Isn't that cool? Let me ponder that for a minute. You know, he's right. There are three things to go after. So try.
Here's a thought that goes along with that. Show them, don't tell them.
Now engage the experience with them. It's okay. One thing I love about my pastor is he's still old school, even though he's, you know, modern. He still goes out to the front door of our very hip, cool-looking church, and he kisses babies, high-fives. You know, he's still Southern Baptist to the bone from that perspective. He's not in our really... We designed this really cool green room for him. He ain't seen that thing in forever. He's like, I don't need that mess. I want to talk to people, which inspired our book we're designing called Stink Like Sheep. You know, we love people, but people are messy. We're jacked up. So create a culture that lets the messiness be okay. You know, you please don't portray perfect examples, because it's not. They know it. You know it. A friend of mine, I walked by. Wonderful believer, loves Jesus. But I was walking by his car on the way into the church, and he just cussing a blue streak about something. Just mad as fire at somebody on the phone. So he gets out of the car, and I said, I just started laughing at him. I said, it's that kind of morning, huh? He goes, yeah, it's that kind of morning. I said, bro, then let's get in there, because we can't have those kind of mornings. He's like, yeah, I'm sorry you heard that. No, I'm okay with it. Nothing can shock you in this experience of bringing people into it. Be prepared for all of it. But create a story that when they check you out in every way, shape, and form, every corner, let it just be the real story. It doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be consistent.
That's good.
And I got to go get
ready. Yeah, rolling. You got to roll.
I got to go prepare you for your next experience.
What's
it? Too loud, blame the light down.
I want to give you a really brief story, and then we'll open up for conversation. So there's a church in Miami that I'm working with. I love Miami, by the way. It's a really cool city, except for the heat. I don't like the heat. And the pastor tells this story of how he literally like died from a heart attack, and for 42 minutes was without a pulse. Like that's a long time. That's dead. And he said there were all kinds of people trying to revive him. And when he woke up, there were somebody doing compression and the whole like thing. And he said there were people putting, you know, this is when they were trying to revive him at first. There were people putting their mouth on my mouth and breathing into my lungs to try and get me to be revived. And he said, in that moment, I didn't care if they were believer or unbeliever, if they were gay or straight, or if they're an alcoholic, or whatever their story was, all I cared was that they were there to save my life. And he said, it was like the most amazing spiritual transformation for me, because I said, in my head, that is the kind of church that I want to lead. And so we asked ourselves the question, how can we bring that story to life? So there's a big section that we have designed in their lobby. It's a big concrete wall, and it's just got a print of an EKG on it. And it's got a small plaque on that, so that the EKG kind of draws you over to it. And it's just got a small paragraph from the pastor saying that story that I just told you. And it's got his signature on it. So what that does is somebody who might be any of those things that he said, I didn't care what who you are, that you were there to save my life, they're reading it and they're thinking, wow, what a great statement. I think I might be able to fit in here. Does that make sense?
So there's all kinds of ways. You can do it portable. You can do it with banners. You can do it on walls. Vinyl's a really inexpensive way to do that these days. You can print whatever you want and put it, and it's easy to change. So we'll take a few minutes. If you guys have any questions, we'll do some Q&A, and then we'll let you go. I'd like to go first. Or we don't have to.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Like, I want to talk about signage a little bit as far as an environment. I heard, you know, some of the guys that earlier said, you know, that's so important. What's your sense on that?
I think signage is very important. Again, people want to know, where do I pee? Where do I check my kids in? And where's the auditorium? Wayfinding, you know that word wayfinding? It tells them how to find their way. That's what that means. There needs to be clear arrows, clear words, clear pictures. Use icons. Create your own sets. But use words too. Don't use just icons, because, again, that doesn't communicate to some people. But make it as clear as possible. If your foyer is small and congested, don't put banners or signs on the ground. Because when you get a bunch of average 6-foot people filling a lobby, they're not going to see your signage. So what you got to do, you've got to hang it high. You can do that in a portable setting. Find ways to hang it from drop ceiling or from, you know, whatever lobby. I've seen portable churches like carry a 20-foot pole in their trailer with a hook on the end, and they click it in on Sunday morning, you know? Easy. Signage is huge. Use signage for communicating where to go, and use some of that signage for photographs. And, you know, even in a portable setting, you can use a digital display. Maybe it would be more beneficial for us to roll through photos and video of our church serving the community. More important than it is whatever thing we're doing next week at 6 p.m. People don't care about our white noise anymore. What they care about is knowing who are you. Yes, sir.
Talked about how our website and our social media should reflect our story. Basically, I hope a pair for them for their Sunday morning experience. So what are some examples that you can put on our website, let's say?
Okay. When you're creating a look for your environment, even the wayfinding, maybe some of the textures that you use are the same textures they see online. Backdrops, the designs look the same. If you've got like a square sign, have it look and be in the exact same font and typeface that it is on the website. Because what that does is it shows somebody there's a familiarity. Okay, you told me you were going to be like this, and then I come here and I see it. Okay, that's just one more thing I can... And nobody says this, but they feel this and experience this. That's one step I can trust you on.
You're talking about continuity then.
Continuity, right? It's consistent communication over time builds trust.
Now, does that move beyond the... Because obviously, most of the out on our splash page will have our current series. You know, have the logo. I'm sure what we're talking about is moving beyond just that, right? I mean, we're talking maybe just color schemes.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Find the colors. Color schemes are important. Like, it's an identity. Be very, very, very cognizant of the colors you choose for your church. Colors communicate emotion. Shapes communicate emotion. Those shapes and colors. You show an Apple logo to some people, and some people, like, it gives them great glee. And some people brings a deep hatred. You know, and I got a friend of mine who's that way. He's a good friend of mine. He has a deep hatred for Apple because he really hates Steve Jobs. It has nothing to do with the computers. He was like, the guy was just such a rear end to everybody. Like, after he saw the movie, he's like, I don't want to have anything to do with that company. And so, again, shapes mean things. They communicate. So you can do, like, easy, just a Google search of what do colors mean. Those need to be the same, the shapes. Certain shapes portray forward movement. Certain shapes portray community. Certain shapes portray trust. You know, even when it comes down to just a simple circle with a line around that, to some people, they feel closed out of it. We don't think through things this way all the time. Again, that's why it comes back to layering.
With multi-site campuses, it was always a struggle between, you know, here it's, you know, one campus, two locations, or one church, two locations, three locations. How important is it for, and maybe the positive church, but how important is it for that continuity to spread between all the campuses?
Sure.
You know, when do you start thinking about, okay, the culture in this city may not reflect obviously the culture of this city?
Absolutely. I think it goes back to, it's like an embassy thing. It's like we're communicating the same thing, but we're just speaking a different language over here.
Gotcha.
My home church, there's several locations. One campus, it's all white collar, like lots of, like the guests are wearing, you know, designer jeans and shoes. And one campus is all Realtree camo, based on the location and the area there. Like, and like you don't see, there's almost not a mix between the two. And you've got a whole other campus that's kind of like, you know, sports attire. Here's a great way to think through it when you think through campus strategy and what goes and what doesn't go. And this is good for you guys to be thinking through. Again, it goes to your church philosophy, because some are like, it's got to be exactly 100% the same. And others are like, yeah, we don't care, whatever you want. I would say this way, it's kind of like, it needs to be like an Apple product. I've got a phone, I've got an iPad, I've got a MacBook Pro. They're all very different. I use them in very different ways, but I feel like I'm using an Apple product, and it all very familiar. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
And so as we're thinking through like differences in locations and campus, like they're all going to be used for something different, but we're all speaking the same language. And so, you know, my personal opinion, I don't think we've got to go through such great lengths that, like, you know, if I look at it from this angle, it's the same at both campuses. I think that's stupid. It's about focusing on the details, but it's about focusing on the right details in the environments we create. People aren't going to notice this detail and that detail and that detail and that detail, but they notice the detail and the effort that we've gone through to make them feel comfortable. They don't think it, but they feel it. They don't think, you guys went out of your way to welcome me. You were expecting me. I feel loved here. I feel like community. But nobody ever said that to me. And they're not thinking it, but they're feeling it and experiencing it. Is that helpful?
Yeah, it does. Does it create a team of that church? Obviously, so the familiarity in that creative team needs to be familiar with each of the campuses. I'm guessing that I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it absolutely has to start with the campus pastor.
Yeah.
A central team can't determine for whatever campus that is,
yeah,
what's best for that campus. Because they're not the ones there all the time. That becomes very like ivory palace, like, you know, corporate mindset,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, let's let the people, like, let's give them a package from which they can pick and choose from. Mm-hmm. But we're going to give you the train tracks. You can put whatever type of engine on that track that you. Is that helpful?
Yeah, thank you.
We talked about. We talked about experience, making people feel welcome, making people feel comfortable. What about next steps? Is there a way to communicate in more than just writing or more than just yelling at people from the front or whatever? You know, what's the next big thing for our guests, for us? It's that we want them to come to, you know, coffee with the pastor thing, after the second service, whatever. You know, I mean,
right.
Is it smart to try and communicate that sort of thing environmentally as well, or mm-hmm. is that too far down the road?
Yeah, I just finished working with a church, doing that same thing, and they created like a really small environment in their lobby, and guess what it's called? Next Steps.
Yeah.
It's called Next Steps, and every single week at the end of the day, they say, we want you to take a next step forward today, and they just give people one option per week,
yeah,
per month, one week. There's 4 weeks in a month most of the time, except for 4 months out of the year. 1, 2, 3, and 4. And they're doing something like meet the staff, join a group, join a volunteer team, and some fourth one. Give all your money. I don't know what it is.
Ooh, that's a good one. We just do that every week.
Any other questions? Cool. I'd love to get to know you guys, come say hey. You can check out our website, wave.us, some information about us, and it's good hanging with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Yeah, thank you.